But we're going to chat now to Shol Adar, who is the author of On the Border, The Rise and Decline of the Most Political Club in the World. It's a club we've talked about before, because over the years they've had some very, very contentious moments. It is Beit Ha Jerusalem. Good afternoon, Shol. Good to see you.
Good afternoon. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I mean, you say the most political club in the world. I mean, they almost revel, or they did, I don't know if it's still the case, they used to revel, some of their fans, not all of them, yeah, in the title of the most racist club in the world, well, worryingly.
Most racist club in Israel, which is a very political place, especially Jerusalem. It's not all the fans. Some fans despise that notion. Some owners and chairmen try to fight it, but the current situation doesn't look very promising. It looks like they're back to the old ways.
For people who don't know, I mean, if you can explain that, is football in Israel, it's mixed, isn't it? It's Israelis and the Arab population.
Israeli football is very inclusive place for all excellent footballers. If you're in good Arab-Israeli player, most likely you'll make it to the top teams and to the national team, which half of it are non-Jewish these days. But apart from one club, which is Beit Ha Jerusalem, which it happened to be, it evolved to be some kind of a policy, not declared one, not by the club, but by the ultras organization who called the shots most of the time.
I mean, we've talked about this before in football around the world, that, you know, having fans is a great thing, and having sort of rabid fans who love the club and support the club through thick and thin is great. But then you can be overstepping that when they become too powerful. And I think that's been the case with what they call La Familia, aren't they?
Yeah.
And I mean, in one case, one player said, I think 2009, 2010, you say in the book, that he would be quite happy to play with Arab players in the Beit Ha team. And the ultras called him in, insisted he went to them, and they put him right. And he then issues a statement saying, oh no, I made a mistake, I didn't really want to upset anybody.
He issued an apology.
That's worrying.
That's not good, isn't
it?
Yeah.
Especially if you're looking at the demographic of Israel and Jerusalem. 20% of Israeli population is non-Jewish, and they are well represented in Israeli football. Half of Jerusalem is Palestinian or Arab or Muslim, and it's unnatural, the whole situation. And if we're looking back towards the end of the 90s, Beit Ha were on the verge of becoming the most dominant club in Israel. This day they just scraped through by the skin of the teeth, and to next season they avoided the administration or total collapse. And It's all because racism, nationalism, and becoming a political tool of the Likud party.
It is. I mean, the whole of Israeli football is incredibly political, and I mean, there's a story in there, again, you'll fill us in on the gaps, of the feeling that a game was thrown by one Tel Aviv club to give Beit Ha the title because they couldn't, they didn't want, Hapoel, was it, to win it?
They were chasing Hapoel Tel Aviv to the end of the period I talked about, the end of the 90s. Mm. And Beit Ha played a small team from the Jordan Valley, just on the border, a poor community with strong Likud connections. And the other team scored by chance towards the end of the game and drew the score, which meant Hapoel will win the league next game. And then they just, for 10, 15 minutes, they just stopped playing, tied their laces, and watched as Beit Ha failed to score again and again and again until they score 5 minutes into stoppage time, while thousands of fans are standing on the lines ready to take action. I would say that Beit Ha is very political, and the club of Bnei Sakhnin is an Arab-Israeli club, is also becoming more and more political and Palestinian by definition. Hapoel Tel Aviv is like St. Pauli of Germany, but the rest are just football teams, which again makes Beit Ha the exception.
Yeah.
Do these politics spill over into the matches? I mean, is there a lot of on-pitch rivalry because of what goes on off the pitch?
Very few players. Beitar had, during the latest success years in 2006 and 2007, a player whose sister was an MP for a radical, kind of radical left party. And I spoke to him and he said, everybody knew my opinions and I didn't hide them, but I was always welcomed by players and fans. So, but between the Jewish and Arab players in the last 2 years, it's becoming more and more tense and more outspoken.
Mm. You say in the book as well that when the club was first formed, it had quite strong links to Arab culture and stuff and teams.
Yeah, and they were formed in 1936 and they were ostracized by the big sports organization of Maccabi and Apoel. And they were in Jerusalem then, was a little town under British rule, the outskirts of Israel.
This was before Israel existed,
yeah.
Wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so they were geographically and politically away from the center. And so they played mostly against Arab teams of Jerusalem. And it kind of worked. There were, you know, I'm sure they would have preferred to play against the big team of Tel Aviv and Haifa regularly, but it wasn't an issue. So the way it took a turn since then, it's quite ironic.
In the fact you say, because you kind of look at the history of Israeli football to put this all into context, and one of the things was that the very early days, I think the first league title in 1932 was won by the British police.
Yeah, and the British police and the British Gunners won the cup, if I remember correctly. So when the Brits came, they gave away football balls to communities and schools and clubs all over Jerusalem and the country, hoping it will promote peace and understanding. Thank you for the goodwill, but I'm not sure it...
it worked.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Who are their main rivals on the pitch?
Beitar, yeah?
Yeah,
Beitar.
They got... The local one are Apoel Jerusalem, but they're not... They just came back from the dead after 20 miserable years, so they weren't nowhere as a football competition since the 1980s. Mm. The main one are Apoel Tel Aviv, which became, let's say, image-wise, Apoel choose to be open-minded and welcome refugees, and we don't represent Israel, we represent Apoel Tel Aviv, which is the complete opposite of Beitar. But the main rivalry is with Bnei Sakhnin. It's an Arab-Israeli club from the north, and it wants to represent all of the Arab population of Israel, yeah. Although they have competition inside the Arab community as well. But big games between those two can be violent, nationalistic, and very provocative from both sides. You hear things that you don't hear on other grounds. Praise to the murderer of Prime Minister Yitzhak Rabin, calls to fight on Jerusalem from both sides. It's not for the gentle and
no, faint-hearted, yeah, as they say. And yeah, there are many Hapoels, Maccabees, and Beitars. So, what's the kind of origin of that? What's the meaning of that? The teams that have those,
they all started from Maccabi, which started as a sport organization with liberal. The small bourgeois of Tel Aviv in the 1920s or 30s, whichever, not sure they were very rich or... But the opposite is Apoel, meaning the worker in Hebrew.
Right.
And they were formed as a sport organization of the trade union of the Histadrut for the experts. And they play with hammer and sickle and boxer sign.
A bit like the Russian and Eastern European clubs and the way that the origins of those clubs. Yeah.
Most club plays in red.
Yeah.
Although these days they're all privately owned and there's hardly any socialist connection. Mm-hmm. And Bitar was the sport and youth organization of the Herut movement, which became Likud. And they started as a liberal movement, but extremely fast they became nationalistic and hardcore right-wing.
Yeah, yeah.
Towards they get big crowds as well, don't they? Yeah.
At the time, but not anymore.
Oh, right.
It's dwindled. Just one final little interesting fact from the book is that we kind of thank Israeli football, Israel, for penalties to decide matches, don't we? Tell us why.
Yeah, in 1968, Israel played in the Mexico Olympics and were knocked out at the quarterfinal by Bulgaria. The game ended in a draw, and they lost by a draw, just two names in a hat.
All right.
Legend says it both piece of paper were under Bulgaria name.
It's a bent draw.
Yeah, but who knows? And after it that was the closest Israel got to an Olympic medal until the 1992 Olympics in Barcelona. And the Israeli FA were extremely hard. And they were looking into a way to make it to take decision on the pitch, not by a chance.
And so there we are. So that was it. So Israel was sawn off in that draw. So we had to have a better way of doing it. That's fantastic.
So you can blame us for.
We can. Yeah, all those ones we've lost. Yeah. Shaul, good to see you. Thank you for coming in. Best of luck with the book. We wish you well. It's a really interesting subject. On the Board of the Rise and Decline of the Most Political Club in the World by Shaul Adar is available now. It's published by Pitch.